Tonight's guest has got to be one of the most unique guests I have had the honor of speaking with. And you guys tonight, as you sit and listen to the show, are going to be amazed. Wherever you may be listening in the world or here in the United States of America, welcome to Radio Disclosure. Tonight's guest, without further ado, is Trey Smith. And Trey Smith is going to talk to us tonight about the Nephilim, UFOs in the Bible, and connect all this stuff together in a way that you've never heard before. So, before I even attempt to start, Trey, to describe what's going on here in this ancient text that so many people believe 100%, some people believe is maybe not as true as some people want to say it is, where do you start on something like with UFOs in the Bible, ETs, sex with extraterrestrials written in the book of Genesis? Where do you start with something like this?
Well, that's, you know what, that's almost the greatest intro that, you know, in terms of a question, because it really does, it puts it in perspective. On one end of the fence, you've got people that are really, really hardcore and with good cause in many cases. Believe that they interpret the text in a different way than I do, in a different way than others do, and I actually respect that. And then you've got other folks that are looking at the text and they're looking at the circumstances around them, they're looking at the world, and they're looking particularly at a lot of things that are currently being really pushed in the media. I mean, you see an alien face everywhere that you turn, from car ads to movies to everything. And the question, for those that are, that are spiritual of any sort, and most especially if you're a Christian, the question that really drives your mind is why? What's behind it? Is it as simple as an organic thing, or this is just a sort of a buzz topic of the hour of, aliens and these other kind of things? Or is there something deeper that's pushing this? Are we becoming accustomed or being made to be accustomed to these type of images, everything from the paranormal and the supernatural, which of course has a much longer and extensive history, to the aliens that are on the front of your car ads? So the question is, what is it that we're looking at? And the story really begins, if we're talking about the word Nephilim, in a biblical context, it's going to take us all the way back to the book of Genesis, in Genesis 6, and how you interpret that particular section of text. And one train of thought with the seminary schools and the theological community for years has taught is that what you're reading there is that you're reading these evil sons of Seth are the B'nai Ha Elohim. These are the evil sons of Seth that they're interbreeding with the women, and this creates a lot of sin on earth. And then
let's back up for a second.
Go ahead.
Who is this guy or entity or whatever you call it by the name of Seth?
Seth is one of the Seth is one of the sons and in the descent line of Adam. So, but what you're reading there in the passage, in my opinion, what you're reading there in Genesis 6, and it's pretty direct in the text, is that you're reading, the word B'nai Ha Elohim, which is what's used in the text. This term is always used for angels all throughout the entirety of the Bible. That's what you're reading is making entrance and sleeping with. Literally producing its own offspring. And you're not just seeing this in the biblical text in Genesis 6, and also seeing this carry itself out, because what it's producing is giants amongst other anomalies.
All right, back up for a second. Back up. Just so that the audience understand this, we just took a huge leap into this entire thing, just so that everyone can take a grasp this for a second. In Genesis, you're telling me that it describes angels and man having sex, angels and the daughters of men, to be more scripturally correct in the King James Version, having sex and having children, and it creates the giants, is what you're saying. Is that, I mean, you said that so fast, and I don't want that to be missed here for a second. I mean, you just went past this, and I don't think many people understand what this means. I mean, this is like, wait a second.
Yeah, I guess it's because I'm so used to saying it, but yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. That's precisely what the text is telling you. And this is larger in scope when you're dealing with the flood of Noah. You know, the issues going on prior to that flood are larger in scope than just people sinning. If sin brings the flood, then we need to get our life jackets. What you're looking at is you're looking at God literally taking everything back down to zero. And the reason why he's doing that, well, it's giving you the reason right there in Genesis 6, because you've got things that shouldn't be here that are doing things they shouldn't do. And there's an unusual book called the Book of Enoch, and this is a very controversial book, and I would never tell anyone that this book should be held up to biblical canon. But yeah, let me couch that like this. I am a strong believer. Just because it's not biblical canon doesn't mean that it's not authentic. And it is my strong opinion that book should not only be taken seriously, but very seriously. And if we have time in the show, I can take you through some reasons why I believe that. But that particular book is going to expound on Genesis 6 by a whole lot. And this is a book that is directly quoted by Jude, who's the half-brother of Jesus Christ. That pulls a lot of weight. It's a book also alluded to by Peter. So this is not a trite issue, but it is a controversial text. And that text is not only going to tell you about the interbreeding. Now, the idea of these giants coming from these unions prior to the flood, it often gets translated directly that way, and it is true that there were giants, or that is what the text is indicating, but it's not limited to that. You're talking about the birth of all sorts of anomalies. And when you're looking at Enoch, you're reading about animals being mixed with other animals, plants being mixed with plants. You're reading a whole multitude of things that the angels are physically teaching mankind. And it's curious, when you're reading that text, specifically what the angels are teaching mankind.
That's right.
They're teaching mankind the casting of incantations. They're teaching the women how to look seductive. They're teaching the smiting, specifically states this, the smiting of the baby in the womb. They're teaching the arts of war, as if everything you're looking at, truly, Matt, this is what it actually does. When I'm looking at that book of Enoch, it brings whole new meaning to when Jesus Christ in Matthew 24 says, as in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the return of Son of Man. And that has two parts, by the way, because you've got the time before the flood when you're dealing with Noah and the time after the flood. But in that time before the flood, you're literally reading about the mixing of things that shouldn't be mixed in almost a genetic sense. And this is, I mean...
Now, let me ask you this, Trey. Do you have any evidence or proof that you can kind of validate more of the Book of Enoch as an actual book that you want to say, you know what, this book probably may not belong in our canon today, but definitely 100% this book should be something that every Christian reads to get a larger scope, be it only 50% correct or 80% correct, every Christian should read it to get an idea of what's in it.
Oh, you absolutely should read it. Whether you believe it's true or don't believe it's true, you absolutely owe it to yourself to read that text. I'm going to do a video, and I mean to pitch something right here in the middle of your show, but I'm going to put together a more in-length video on Enoch than the one that's up, just to answer these very type of questions, but to give you some tip of the iceberg answers to
what
you asked.
Well, I'll tell you what, hold on just a second, Trey. Hold on just a second. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick station break, and when we come back, folks, we're going to pick Trey's mind, and we're going to pick his brain on the Book of Enoch right here on Radio Disclosure. My guest is Trey Smith, and we're going to talk about the Book of Enoch here. Before we just came back, we were talking about Genesis 6. And Genesis 6 in the Bible talks about all kinds of stuff, which is more described in the Book of Enoch. And Trey Smith, in my opinion, is an expert in this field. And Trey, I don't even know where to begin in the Book of Enoch. I mean, it talks about all kinds of stuff. Where do you want to begin on this, man?
Well, I'd like to just touch some points that really jump out at me with validating. Is the text true or is it not true? And I can't tell you for a certainty, Matt, that the text hasn't been tampered with or that people haven't added to it. But I can tell you, well, let's just go through some things. Enoch is telling you some things that he should not have known. That the original arguments about Enoch was that it was a text that came after Jesus Christ, significantly after Jesus Christ, because this is a text that is redundantly using this term, the coming of the Son of Man. And this is a, this is how Jesus referred to himself, which of course, you know, spawns debunkers to say that, you know, it had to have come after the fact. Well, portions of the Book of Enoch were not just found in Africa, but were also, well, complete manuscripts of the text were found in Africa. But portions of this text were found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So that, at bare minimum, the shortest fuse that you could put on that is 100 B.C., so it's somewhere between 100 B.C. and 300 B.C. So this puts you, at bare minimum, before Jesus Christ, whilst predicting the coming of this Son of Man, the Lord of the sheep, the one that Enoch says that through his name they shall be saved. These are all very interesting statements. And Enoch goes on and elaborates on this for more than a chapter. Now, more than this in those texts, what really jumps out at me are some of the scientific things that Enoch or whatever writer, even if you were to ascribe this as some kind of pseudepigrapha text or some kind of, and what that means is a text that was written by someone else meant to look like it came from Enoch. Even if you were to argue that it was that, then this is an interesting fraudster. Because Enoch is telling you in that text, he's telling you that, first of all, that the earth is round. And this is interesting knowledge, okay? So this sort of bumps it up a notch. But he's going a step further than that. He's telling you that the sun and the moon are different sizes, that the sun is much larger than the moon. He's telling you that both of these entities, the sun and the moon, are designed by God, right, to appear the same size when they pass each other, okay, which is an interesting effect to begin with, that these things would be distance out so it would have that appearance. But for someone at that time period to state that as a matter of fact, like it was common knowledge, is curious. Then he's going a step further than that, and he's saying that the moon doesn't give off any light. He's specifically stating in his text that the moon receives her light from the sun and reflects it back to the earth.
Now,
then he's
going to
take you through the phases of the moon. Now, these are all interesting things for this guy to know, particularly if one were arguing that this is merely some writer making up some text in 100 B.C. But Enoch's not done yet. He's going to tell you about the globe of the earth. He's going to tell you that the north, if you go all the way due north on our little round planet, that it's covered with ice and snow. Right? And then he's going to tell you that if you go all the way due south, right, that it's also covered with ice and snow. Now you're dealing with somebody that would have had to have been a world geographer and traveler, okay?
And it sounds like an astronaut.
This is kind of unique knowledge that is all coming together in one particular guy. And the calendar that Enoch has got that he's working off of is different than any calendar. All of the calendars that were used during that time period, whether you're dealing with the Babylonians or you're dealing with any of those areas out there, they all had 360-day calendars. Different cultures had different systems of making up for the extra days, so they would get it to come out right. So some cultures would, you know, add on a month extra after a number of years went by, or however they made up the difference. But they all use 360-day calendars. Enoch is the only one that is using a 364-day calendar. And you say, well, why would he use that calendar? Well, it's my belief, and I've looked at other men's work on this, some men that have spent decades on it. He's actually using a calendar that is designed to match up with Jewish holidays. But nonetheless, in my opinion, this calendar that he's using is unique from any other calendar on Earth, and does in fact do that. It does in fact, it would in fact get your Jewish feast days to come out on the same days every year, which is a difficult task. And these, again, these are the tip of the iceberg, of the reasons why I believe that text is more than worthy of your consideration. But the text is also telling you, some things that are pretty abstract to us as well, but things that match up with what every other single pagan culture was saying. Every pagan culture on Earth has legends or myths, particularly the large cultures, cultures like Egypt, Samaria, Assyria, ultimately ending in Babylon, and these kind of places. Legends of, you know, absolutely they all have the flood account. They all have a man on a boat. Well, they all have some version of a boat that is going to save humanity. But that prior to that flood, you had these entities that, you know, that came in and began to manipulate mankind. And also that the entities were attracted to the women. So, and these, you know, although these stories have a lot of differences, those basic elements are there. And I would humbly submit to anyone's hands that this is more than worthy of your consideration.
So you look at this guy, Enoch, that's writing this book, or someone that has written it for him, or an author of some sort writing about Enoch. Has the ability.
This would also be, I mean, Matt, look at it like this. If you're looking at an authentic text, this would be the great grandfather of Noah. Okay, that's who Enoch would be. And Enoch is the one listed in the book of Genesis as the one who was not, for God took him. So this would be a family text. This legitimately would be a text that would actually be on that boat. This would have been a text that would have been very valued by Noah. It would have been very valued by Methuselah. It would have been very valued by Lamech. And these are all of the children leading down to Noah, the very man that's going to build the boat that's going to save all mankind. So this is a document that would have been on that boat. And this document, this book of Enoch, begins by telling you, this book is not for my generation, but for a remote one, which is for to come, the last generation. Yes, Matt, I very much think that every Christian should look at it, even if they didn't believe in it.
Well, what astounds me about this book and the way you describe this book is the fact that there is so much scientific knowledge put in here. Just how, I mean, there's no way that a single man or a, without some kind of, I mean, even today, we still have trouble. I mean, you know, you talk about it's not rocket science. I mean, this guy, I mean, when I said he was an astronaut, I mean, to know the size of the moon and the sun, I mean, to have those kind of observations just in science alone, written down, 200 BC, okay, we're saying 200 BC before Christ.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, 200 BC before Christ.
This
would be
blows my mind.
It would be, well, I mean, if in fact it was constructed at that time, this would definitely be a guy that you would have wanted to take to Vegas with you. Because, this is just a really good guesser. But it's also the way that he's mentioning these things. See, he's not bringing these to your forefront as if they're, you know, his theories or ideas. I mean, they're couched within the text as if it's common knowledge to everybody at that time. Because, it's structured in, like, when he's talking about the sun and the moon, see, he's fixing to talk to you about his calendar. Okay, so he's really sort of, you're grabbing these scientific things out of the text by a writer who's not even really focusing on them. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Well, try
it. It's just couched in an explanation of something else that you're grabbing these. Or when he's talking about the caps of the earth being ice covered, see, this entire dialogue is couched in something else he's saying, okay, as if he's not even paying it any mind.
So the other aspect of this book that I want to catch in the next segment here, if you don't mind, is going to be the description of the fallen angels that Enoch is talking with back and forth.
That sounds fantastic. And there are some issues with the text that Christians commonly bring up, and I'd like to address those as well, because it's not fair to just bring up its strong points without discussing its weaknesses.
That sounds great. We'll be back. This is Radio Disclosure. This is going to be a ride. We're talking with Trey Smith, a guy that I believe is one of the world's experts, or foremost experts, on the Book of Enoch. And I promised, coming into the last break there, that we were going to talk about the fallen angels and what they were doing to the world. And correct me if I'm wrong, Trey, is that not why the flood happened, or is it a little different from that? Before we get into that, is that correct?
No, that is the reason for the flood. There's the and that's also, I'd like to notate this as well. When you're reading, the early church writers, this was what they all commonly believed. This is not some kind of idea. Now, this is an idea that sort of somehow dropped into the shadows. And in fact, the Catholic Church was one of the largest fighters against that Book of Enoch and against these very type of theologies. But and those have, even in the Pentecostal churches and great, fantastic churches, this belief has been lost. But even when you're looking at writers like Josephus, this was what everybody believed and understood, and it's certainly what Jude is elaborating on when you're reading this short and very powerful. There's so many Christians who have not read that book of Jude. You need to, before you even think about reading Enoch, read the book of Jude. This was the belief that the early Christians almost certainly would have had. And so what we're talking about on this radio show, though it seems to a great many sort of out there, what we're actually talking about is what the early church believed and understood to be true.
So what happened?
Well, a set of angels came in. If you're looking at the book of Enoch, what Enoch's going to put a number to that. It's going to say there were 200 fallen angels and that made entrance to this place. This by no means represents the entirety of the fallen angels. This is a small portion of the fallen angels that made entrance to this place, and they really crossed some extra lines with God, if you will. And that's what's being covered in Enoch, that these 200 angels, and in Jude, that these angels have they've crossed some kind of extra line, which is going to get them bound in chains until the day of judgment. So there are plenty of fallen angels that are still presumably, running loose and doing. But these 200 have been extra punished. They're bound in chains waiting for a day of judgment because of this thing that they've done. And that was the interbreeding with the women. They were trying to have their own offspring. And what fascinates me is that when you're looking at, for instance, the claimed alien stuff, which you're always hearing about with these experiences, always deals with eggs and semen and the sexual parts. In fact, to the degree that we've made jokes about it. I mean, with every alien story, you're going to get probed. But this really is the heart of it. And when you're watching or listening to these abduction experiences, which I've listened to tons of them at this point, it is my sincerest belief that these people are describing to you, most of them. I understand some are making up a story for whatever, but by and large, most of these people are describing events that are not only terrifying, and that's important knowledge. What they're describing to you are not friendly little things. They're describing to you terrifying experiences that they believed in some context are real. Real experiences that they were terrified of, where something is collecting from them or has a very, very dire interest in their sexual parts, more specifically eggs and semen. And this at bare minimum is disturbing because it brings up, larger questions of what is it building. But just on its surface level, and let me touch on that for a second. When we're talking about the alien stuff, I can't tell you there aren't men on other planets because I haven't visited all the other planets. But the phenomenon that they are pitching to you as aliens, which will intensify, in my opinion, is identical to what anyone in the ancient world would have described to you as demons or underworld gods, whatever term you want to give it.
What evidence do we have of these beings other than this text and other than the current accounts of countless many people talking about their abduction stories? What evidence?
Every single culture of the ancient world. This is what they did. In fact, this is, right now today, when people are talking about secret societies and these other kind of things, the secret of the secret societies is Luciferianism. And everyone, tosses this, even if you don't believe it, they believe in the devil. Well, what does that mean? These people are extremely religious. Okay, they are. Some of them are hardcore, beyond out of your mind religious, and the beliefs that they practice are the beliefs that are through the entirety of the ancient world, and those beliefs are the summoning of the little underworld gods, the little spookies, right? The little incantations and spells, and we're summoning something from a dark realm.
We're not talking about a Ouija board now, are we?
Well, the Ouija board is conceptually the same thing. We're just talking about a larger level of that. In fact, Matt, on a later show or later talk, I could walk you through. See, you can identify something by the nature of it and what it does. And I could make a real strong case to you, Matt, that, you know, when you walk into a psychic and you're trying to summons a dead loved one, or you've got the little spookies in some kind of haunted house, or you got, you know, Indians walking through a field that disappear, you know, this is what I'm telling you. The same people running haunted houses are the same people running your UFOs. And the source of it, see, you can tell the source of it because the message of all of it is identical. And that's why when you're dealing with your Illuminati people, for lack of a better term, that it has the appearance on the surface level that you're dealing with people who are really smart, when in fact you're not. You're dealing with the rock-dot idiots of the planet Earth. What makes them have the appearance of really smart, that they're setting up these elaborate fabric of plans that, you know, take hundreds and hundreds of years to consummate, is not because they're doing all of this elaborate planning. It's because they're listening to demons. The fabric of what binds them together, where they get their information, their instructions, is all spiritual, even if they don't understand what they're listening to. But some of them are interacting directly with these beings, just like what your ancient texts are telling you. I mean, that's what they're striving to do. That's the whole point of summoning something, is that they're trying to communicate with something otherworldly, and indeed they are. And so you mentioned Ouija boards a second ago. Yeah, this is the same thing that's happening, but on a larger scale. So if you've got some kids together, and they're probably listeners on the other side of your show. In fact, I know as a matter of factual certainty that you sitting on the other side of this radio show have probably, with 90% probability, had some kind of spiritual experience that you don't tell your friends about or whatever, that you've sort of written off in the back of your mind. And some of you listening to this show have had some pretty intense ones. And I'm telling you right now that you're not crazy, you're not out there. None of that stuff. What it is it's real. And you're living in a society that has done everything that it can to deny the spiritual, the dimensional, whatever you want to call it. Your enemy is real. And it's like a parasite.
So let's get back to these ancient cultures for a second, Trey.
Go ahead.
What do they have in common? I mean, you're talking about these ancient cultures. You got 200 fallen angels that have come to the earth. What do they have in common?
Luciferianism. They have in common that they worship underworld gods. They have in common, and even the drawings are similar. It's not just that there's stories in the text. Many of these cultures are actually drawing it out for you. Like Egypt, the concept of the underworld, which by the way is in most every culture, and these wisdom serpents are in most every culture. The first wisdom serpent in the story of mankind is right there in the garden, okay, in Genesis 3. But that's the fabric that's got all of it in common, is that you're dealing with hostile spiritual entities that have different levels to them. So, you know, an angel, if you will, I mean, this is, you're talking about a very powerful entity, but you're also talking about something that's fallen. And people need to recognize that. You're dealing with something that is beneath you. It doesn't matter how powerful it was at some point in the past. You're dealing with something that has rebelled. And I don't know the details of that, but it's at odds with its creator. And that's why these things are begging for little, you know, in the ancient world, they want you to sacrifice your babies to them. They want you to do, see, it needs you to appease it. It needs you, even with the Ouija board, it needs you to give it attention because it has no power on its own. And even with the alien stuff, it's trying to shield from you what it's doing. It's trying to, you know, it's trying to manipulate. It's trying to do these. And all of these are hostile, you know, indicators of hostility, right? But it also indicates something else, that it is drop dead terrified that you, on the other side of this radio show, would understand that it's real. That's the truth about the little play game entities, the little underworld gods. They're scared to death of you. And they're scared to death that you would see them for what they are, because they're nothing. And they're playing their last cards. That's what they're doing. Their story is actually an incredibly sad one.
Well, I tell you what, Trey.
They wish that they could be you.
I tell you what, Trey. Come back from this break. I want to hear why these guys wish to be us and why they're totally terrified of us. And I want you to tell if you have any advice for our listeners. If they've had a spiritual experience, especially a negative one, such as one is a sexual experience, such as one is even being abducted on a UFO, what they can do to help themselves on a spiritual sense. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm Matt Aaron, and let me tell you, Trey, this has got to be a tough one. I mean, what can somebody do if they're in the middle of a demonic attack or a demon attack, or abducted in a UFO, you know, and, you know, we were making the joke earlier that they're being probed. What can the average, everyday common person, or if they're just having, we'll call it the spook at the house, what can they do to protect themselves in today's world?
Are you kidding me? That's the simplest question you've asked yet. It's the question that most people would come to the conclusion of last. But if that's happening to you, and you're like, you've got something spooky or something that even something that's messing with you in your dreams or disturbing your sleep or uncomfortable feelings, the answers to every one of those questions are identical, and that is that you get down on your knees and you say, Lord Jesus, I want a protection, a literal protection over my home. I want a protection over the things that come into my life, the things that pass in my doorways. And if something is attacking you, right in the middle of it, you get out of your little lips the name of Jesus. Even if you don't believe in Jesus and you're listening to the show, you do it even if you don't believe it'll work. Because it will work. I promise you it'll work. And if it doesn't work, you write me up and you tell me that it didn't work. But I'm telling you right now that it will work. And in fact, there's hundreds of cases. There's entire organizations online. I wish I could remember the name of them off the top of my head. But you type it into the internet right now. UFO abduction stopped in the name of Jesus. And you're going to find extensive studies on this, guys that have actually broken down, and that's the only thing that will stop your UFO experience.
That's incredible.
There's power in that name, and the pages of that Bible, every last one of them, the more seriously, the more you begin to study that text of the Bible, the more you begin to take every sentence literally, every word literally. There's nothing trite in that book. It is an honest history of mankind. In fact, taking that a step further, what you're looking at in the Bible, and all the other little cultures are supportive of the Bible, and they're neat to read about. That's what I spent a lot of my childhood doing and a lot of my time doing. I combed through those ancient cultures. But there is no book on the face of this planet Earth like that Bible. There's no book that is with 100% accuracy telling you the future in advance. That book is given to you as the most incredible gift. And it is my strongest opinion that you could do yourself no greater disservice than not to, before you think about the book of Enoch, the Bible is the book that is giving you power. And it is telling you about the place that you're in. And yes, it's true, the place that you're in, it has little spookies, no matter what the guys on the TV screen are trying to talk you out of, and they're jibber-jabbering this, jibber-jabbering that. Yes, you're in a spiritual, you're smack dab in the middle of a spiritual war. And that war really has nothing to do with Illuminati guys that may be up here trying to make a New World Order happen. It really has nothing to do with the ancient, it has to do with you. You're making a fundament. You're an infant in something much larger than any of us can understand, and none of us have it right. Right? We're little babies in something that we don't, and we're sort of blind here. We're sort of wobbling this way and wobbling that. But that's why God has gone to extra lengths to make this extra, extra simple. And that is, all you have to do is call on your Savior. And all the little spooky things, no matter how scary they are, no matter what they do, no matter what little troubles they're trying to cause and chaos they're trying to wreak in your life, yeah, they back off.
So
but you have to keep doing it.
So
because they back off, and then they come back, and then they back off, and then they come back, and they back off, and they come back. And they're probably going to do this for your whole life.
So I got to
just keep pulling out your winning card.
I got to ask this question.
Go ahead, man.
What happened to all of these giants in the offspring? I mean, are those spirits still around? Are they still here? Are they roaming the earth today? Is there fossil evidence of these giants that were here on the planet during this time, during this genetic manipulation to the human race? What is that? I mean, the two big questions I have when I think about this, the scientific evidence of this, and on a spiritual basis, are those entities still roaming the earth somehow?
Well, yeah, according to the Book of Enoch, when they die, I mean, these are things that should have never been created. So these are becoming or getting added to your demons when they die. But in terms of evidence of them, and that makes sense to me, because they're things that never should have been here. They're not products of God. They're products of fallen angels doing things that they got bound up for. That's what you're reading. In terms of on the face of the planet, is there evidence for it? Even in your own Bible, you're reading about giants. You're reading about Goliath. And in terms of what is the size of somebody like Goliath, and there are guys out there that will argue these things get a lot larger. But what you've solidly got in your Bible, Goliath is, you know, a lot of people come up to the math of 10'6", maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but that's the ballpark that you're in, at least for Goliath. You've got King Og, you've got certainly out there in Egypt, you've got sarcophaguses that are 14 feet long. The sarcophagus is generally roughly the size of the guy because it's made for the guy. You've got reports about this from, you know, as far as the East Coast is from the West in the United States. I mean, you've got dig sites in Nevada. You've got them out in Ohio. And the truth is you've got them sprinkled everywhere in between. Some of them are national, you know, park sites. But these are Indian lands with Indian legends. And more than that, back, you know, before the 1950s, you're finding dozens and dozens and dozens of articles about bones being found that are in the, you know, many of them in the 10-foot range or more, right? And I have no idea where those bones went. Many believe that they sort of get sucked into a vacuum at the Smithsonian, and Lord knows where they go. The truth is I don't have that answer. Now, you've got fragments of bones. You've got a bone jaw that's of incredible size, but you've got men like Abraham Lincoln, like in this Nephilim DVD that I'm hopefully going to get out here in the next week or two that has the extra content in it. You've got quotes from, Abraham Lincoln. He said, the ancient giant, you know, our eyes gaze now, and this isn't verbatim, but you look up the quote by Abe Lincoln on giants, our eyes gaze now, on the same lands that the giants, the ancient culture of giants, something to that effect. I've got the quote twisted horribly, but he makes a quote about giants while he's standing out there that he actually delivered before he became president, while he was standing out there at Niagara Falls. Many of these articles come from the New York Times about these, you know, these finds. So it would be very difficult to believe that all of that is some kind of an organized hoax. Yeah, the bones are there. But you're also finding other weird stuff that shouldn't be there. I particularly focused in that Nephilim video that I did on things that they're finding out there a lot in Peru. These elongated skulls that they're finding. Now, a lot of these can be done by binding a baby's head, but some of them absolutely cannot because the structure of the skull is different. You can't change the structure of a human skull in terms of how the bones fit together. See, on every human skull, you listening to this radio show, you've got a frontal plate, and then you've got two plates that are behind that frontal plate called the parietals, okay? And these all fit together. These elongated skulls, some of these, it's not just that they're 25-35% larger in size, and some of them are larger than that. I mean, these are massive. But they've got these enormous skull caps on the back. What I'm telling you is that the skull of the head literally fits together differently than your skull. You can't do that by wrapping, by boarding a baby's head or by wrapping something around it. The eye sockets are different sizes. You've got all these different measurements. You have different amounts of teeth in their mouths. These are all enormous red flags. And I can't tell you exactly what you... And these, mind you, are surrounding ritual, megalithic ritual sites. And when I say ritual sites, I'm talking about sites where the blood of babies was flowing into the streets. These were the practices of the people. You are talking dark, twisted stuff. And that's what your ancient past is littered with. It's littered with this worship of the ancient, whether you're dealing with Baal, or whether you're dealing with Moloch, or whether you're dealing with Bel, or whether you're dealing, it doesn't matter. And another reason why I focus on the symbolisms in my videos is because, see, the little names can change over time, but the symbols don't change. Symbols don't change. And I'm a big believer in you can tell the nature of something by what it does. And if something is asking you to bring your babies to sacrifice your little children, see, there's something wrong with that picture. That starts looking to me like a parasite, something that wants to terrify people by cutting their hearts out, something that wants the common man living under slavery and bondage. See, all of these are the reverse of your maker. And these are the very systems that are destined to perish. In your Bible. That's what the book of Revelations is. The book of Revelation. There's so many guys out there right now that are pitching fear, that are pitching this, that are pitching that. You are living in the best pages of that book. And with any luck, you're going to see things that God himself wants you not only to see, but understand. That's why the book is there. And everything on this planet is fighting your understanding of it. So yes, I would argue and conjecture fully and totally.
Do you
those
see
those things are terrified?
Do
that you would know about them because your dad is big and your future is bright, and that's exactly what those pages are telling you.
Do you see evidence today of these same styles of the same entity, should I say, that were doing things then? Do you see?
Oh, absolutely. That's what it all is. Whether you're going into whether you're going in because you know the dead loved one that you're going to talk to with the psychic. These things know incredible amounts about people, but they're also incredibly bad with science stuff. You know, they can't, it's almost like the entities can't tell you how the universe works, but they know an incredible amount. I mean, they can mimic people like nothing else. And Aunt JoJo, who was dumber than a rock when she was alive, will all of a sudden have all sorts of, you know, inspirational stuff to say now that she's dead, talking through the psychic or whatever, right? But more than that, she's now got a mission, right? Your mission is that you're, you know, don't believe in Jesus Christ. Don't be held down by these old things. It's always a degradation of the name of Jesus. See, and that tells me where the source of it is coming from. See, it's just giving up its source. It ain't Aunt JoJo. Okay? Here with a new message to tell you. You'll become enlightened, but you've got to put away these old things. See, that's the message. And that's the message of the alien things, too, which tells me that you're speaking to the same thing, no matter what hole that it pops out of.
That's right.
Because it's only concerned about one thing. and that you don't say the name that it's scared of.
Indeed. Well, Trey, when we come back, I'm going to share an experience with you of a documentary I was trying to film that I believe was destroyed by demonic entities. And as I share this story with you, I am going to be a little bit more transparent than I am normally with my listeners and kind of describe a little bit of a spiritual experience. And then I want your opinion on this thing and see what you think. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Trey Smith. And I hope you enjoy the next segment coming up.
Heart and soul took control of me. Made my juice spread the news. Hands across the sea. Put me down, turn me round.
Our guest is Trey Smith, and I told you I was going to share an interesting story. I used to work for this place called Cedar Vine Manor, and Cedar Vine Manor was a bed and breakfast, and the guy that owned it, his name was Jack George, and we worked for this radio station. It was called WJKM, and WJKM was a part of Cedar Vine. We had a broadcast facility there, and Jack had this dream of this whole entire place. He wanted this bed and breakfast, a place where people can come and have a wedding. He had a stage out back. He had this whole entire thing. Great visionary. And we were driving out there, and the only thing that was there is this crazy old barn. And Jack turned this thing into a miraculous place. Well, Jack had a heart attack and died, and his business assistant before Jack died, Billy, died first. Billy died of a heart attack, then Jack died of a heart attack. And then Jack's wife, Jackie, still alive today, she hired another individual to take care of the place. Something crazy happened to this guy. And it's kind of the same story that happened with Jack. This guy got multiple personality disorder. One day you were talking to Bob, then you were talking to Harry, you were talking to whoever. And this guy committed suicide there at Cedar Vine. Tragic story. So, because growing up I worked at this radio station and I enjoyed working there and being my spiritual past, of growing up in a house where cover doors would slam and beds would shake and the crazy of the crazy. Let me tell you, folks, the crazy of the crazy. You know, I'm not crazy, I'm sane. I'm here in a padded room talking to myself and you. We decided that we wanted to do a documentary, me and my family, about this place because we all ran this radio station together. And we wanted to go to this place and document the fact that there was something evil there, and we wanted to exorcise it out. So, in the process, we started to go through the motions that these people do, like with these ghost TV shows. I'm sure you're familiar with them, Trey. And you know, they walk around with the K2 meters. They walk around with you know, the I'll call it the spookometers, and the infrared cameras and the little recorders, and you get great EVPs. And man, we got some great EVPs there. EVPs, I'm sorry, electronic voice phenomena. Great EVPs. Some that'll make the hair stand straight off your head. You're like, oh my gosh. But I think Trey, you brought up something that you were talking about with the psychics.
Yeah.
We had a conversation with Jack. Supposedly Jack. For over an hour and a half.
What threw you off about it? Anything? I mean, I hate to interject there, but did something throw you off that it wasn't actually Jack you were talking to?
I'll tell you what it was. First off, according to our K2 meter, and for those of you listening that does not know what do you know what a K2 meter is?
I'm not terribly familiar with it. Explain to me.
Okay, a K2 meter is a device that measures magnetic flux. For instance, if you put a cell phone next to it and the cell phone rings, because it's RF, it gives off magnetic energy. And that magnetic energy will cause the meter to blink maybe once or twice. But once that RF connection is established, that meter will no longer blink. If you take a walkie-talkie and put it next to it, you might make it blink. But again, this is magnetic flux. It's not really RF. It's measuring a magnetic field. If you were to take like a magnet and move it around it, the thing would go crazy, okay? And there's certain other devices, you know, that create magnetic energy, like a telephone. When the speaker is activated, very close into that speaker is a magnet causing it to move back and forth. That's what actually makes the speaker move, is a magnet. So that's what it's actually measuring, but you can't really detect that stuff. So this is a massive amount of energy. And what these ghost hunters, and we got some ghost hunters out there, and this is how we discovered that Jack was in the room. And, we asked the question, is this Jack? And the meter blinks twice for yes and once for no. It's an electronic Ouija board is all it is. And let me tell you.
Interesting. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
This thing was so accurate about anything that you asked it. It was so accurate that it was actually kind of spooky. But here's the thing that got me. As soon as I started praying, it stopped.
It didn't like that, huh?
And the thing that made me go, you know what? This is not something, this is part of the thing that we need to get out of here. This is what we're supposed to be casting out.
Yeah.
It was as soon as I started praying, I could feel the negative energy in the room. Very good at hiding what it was. But I guess the question I have for you, Trey, and I bring this up because people need to understand what they're dealing with when they're playing with this stuff. They need to understand more of... And see, I'm not an expert in this, but I consider you a lot more educated in this than I am. My goal was to document the fact of what was going on there at Cedar Vine Manor. And let me tell you, I got evidence there at Cedar Vine Manor that would make most people flip out. Wheelchairs moving on themselves by themselves while the preacher is sitting in the wheelchair. Stuff that will blow your mind. But Trey, shoot straight from the hip and tell the listener so that way they understand that when they pick up that Ouija board, what this actually means and what they are engaging.
Well, you're playing with real things that are listening. I mean, these things are desperate for someone to listen to them and to give them. But the main mode of operation for any of it is through people. And that's, you know, that's what it is. It wants to be inside of a person. I mean, and that's very real. And that's what, if you were in ancient Egypt, if we were to rewind time for a second, that's what they're doing. They're doing an invocation ceremony for Pharaoh. Pharaoh is literally calling in the spirit of an underworld god to rule through his body and flesh and mind, his entire being, on the empires of earth. He's surrendering his body. They're going to do an entire ceremony, a whole procession from the obelisk, which represents the penis of Osiris. And this is, in fact, the spirit. spirit that he's calling in. The same spirit that guided Osiris is now entering the Pharaoh. That's what's being believed. And the word Pharaoh means God King. Okay? It is the God ruling through the body of the king on the empire of earth. That's it. It's the will of that underworld God that's being done through the body of Pharaoh. This is the entire idea. And that idea operates even on a smaller scope with just the people that are around you, the people in our own lives, right? And when someone gets dark like this man who committed suicide, right? He's, to commit suicide, you've got something that is running inside your head that shouldn't be. You've got something driving you that shouldn't be. And sometimes this can become so intense that you can see it in the person's eyes. In fact, it's commonly said that the windows to the soul are in the eyes. You look in their eyes, but you can tell nobody's home. And, that's really what we're fighting against. It's a spiritual battle, and a big part of this is you fighting to be you. And who are you? Right? We've depicted this all throughout time. Even in cartoons, we somehow instinctively understand these concepts with an angel on one shoulder, the devil on the other. Well, what is that thing in your head that's the pushy little voice? Right? Are you not you? Have you got voices in your head that, why would you try and talk you into doing something? That doesn't even make any sense. And a lot of times, we don't stop and question these things. And we somehow know in our hearts the difference between what we should do and shouldn't do. Even without one text of a Bible, we somehow already have these things written into the programming. But there's something else that wants to push. It really wants to get inside of you. And I've heard stories from folks where this is pretty dramatic. And oftentimes it begins with a house just like what you're talking about, or a building or a hotel or something, old that's out in West Virginia or these other kind of places. And I'm solidly convinced that many of these entities, they'll be inside of a person for their whole lives, and then they'll pretend to be the person after they're dead. They'll hang out in the place. They became comfortable with, that person wasn't even them. Some entity that was operating through them, and the entity became so comfortable with it that this is the thing that doesn't make me right. It's just a conjecture of mine, but... what I'm telling you is that, no matter what the specific details are, does it work exactly like this or exactly like that, you're dealing with something that's like a parasite. That's what a demon is. It's an insect. It's a supernatural insect that's looking for any little thing it can devour, and it's looking for any little nook that it can get into your life. And what you're trying to do, your job, is to keep the insects out of your life. And that's really what it is. And we allowed something. I don't know do we have time in this segment for me to go through. I'd like to say something about the Adam and Eve story, if we could. I think that would be really cool, and it would play right into this. I don't know if we have time in this segment.
Well, I'll tell you what. Give a hint of what it is.
I think a lot of the key to this is right there in Genesis 3. I find Genesis 3 so much more powerful than the angels that made entrance this place and did what they did. And I think I can say some things that you probably never heard said in a pulpit before about that passage that might be an aha moment for quite a few of you out there.
All right. Well, it's coming right after this station break. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. This hour has been one of my most enjoyed hours, I think, doing this program. Trey Smith is our guest, and this guy has to be one of my favorite guys to talk biblical stuff to, because he has a knowledge base that just kind of blows my mind, makes me sit back and go, wow, I didn't read that before. I got to go back and study this because this is powerful. And it only brings back to my religion, Christianity, if anyone did not know that, that the Bible is more true in its form of how it was written from the beginning to the end than any book that I've ever read in my entire life. And Trey, you said you wanted to walk through something in Genesis with him. And all I'm going to say is take it away.
It's one of the, you know, it's one of the most touching passages on in the entirety of the Bible. When you're looking at Adam and Eve in the garden, and we all vaguely know the story, and that's the most attacked book in the entire Bible, most specifically the beginning portions of Genesis. And that's not by accident either, my friend. But within those pages, you're reading about Adam and Eve. And we've got a serpent in this story. Now, all the ancient cultures, they all have their wisdom serpents, which is an interesting connotation, because, or the spiritual serpents, whether you're dealing with Kukulcan and the Mayans, or you're dealing with the Urias and the Egyptians, which is always, interestingly enough, coming out of the forehead, where the third eye or the mind's eye would be placed, that the serpent is literally exiting the mind. But these wisdom serpents, and a serpent, the symbolism of a serpent is the last animal that you would think of representing as wise. See, something deeper is being expressed in all of this imagery, and something deeper, the connotations of cold-bloodedness, sort of a reptile type of attitude, that it's not your friend, but it's got this intelligent wisdom to it. And this is what we're dealing with, something a little larger in scale than a big snake, when we're talking about that passage in Genesis. Now, you've got Adam, but you don't have Eve yet. Adam, there are only three places in the Bible where you're going to find Son of God, okay? That's what Adam was, a son of God. More specifically, what it's telling you is that Adam was created in the image of God. Not that he looked like God in the flesh. I mean, it could have connotations like that too, but this is deeper than that as well. That's a very large statement. Three places in there, Son of God, Adam, Jesus Christ, and one last one, the body and the bride of Christ. I give you the power to be sons of God. This is a direct creation of God. That's what Adam is. God then creates all of the animals, and they're all created in pairs, male and female. They're created that way. Okay? And Adam realizes he doesn't have a mate. He doesn't have one, right? He doesn't have a female. But this is going to be different than the animals that are created, because Eve is literally a part of Adam. She is taken out of Adam. When Adam looks at Eve, he's not seeing a hot chick. He's not seeing a groovy gal. He's looking at a part of himself. That's how Adam would have viewed Eve. Now, in that garden, when Eve is at the tree, right, and she's specifically alone, always pay attention to the details. Details are not trite in that book. She's specifically alone. Adam's not there. Okay? And it was Adam that was given the command not to eat off of the tree. And this is more than an apple tree. We would probably all be wrong if we guessed at what the tree was, but this was the one thing he was committed. There was only one thing you couldn't do. Adam had everything under his hand, except that one thing. And Eve, she encounters the serpent. And all temptation always comes in three, whether you're dealing with Jesus Christ and the temptations. You have three of them, right? Turn the rocks into bread, right? That's a temptation of the flesh. You would have been hungry. You're not going to tempt Jesus with a really cute girl, right? So that's the temptation of the flesh. Cast yourself off of this cliff and have the angels catch you, lest you dash your foot against a stone. This is a temptation of the mind, the intellect. Prove to them that you're unusual. And then the third one, of course, the big one. The big one always comes last. All right? Bow down to me. this one time. Showing you all the nations of the world in a moment of time, I'll give all of this to you, which is a statement of ownership. Jesus doesn't deny that. The serpent owns the nations. Okay, that's what he's saying. Jesus doesn't deny that. And I'll give it all back to you. Let's not play little games. Just admit that you were wrong. Bow down to me one time, I'll hand it all back. Well, back to the garden, and remember the three thing, right? The flesh, the mind, and the last one, of course, was the spirit. Right there in the garden, and this will happen to Abraham as well. He's called out of three places, right? So, right there in the garden, when she's the fruit was attractive to the eyes, it's listing three things. It was good to make one wise, there's the intellect, and of course, the mother one, the one that works every time. You'll become as gods. Alright? That one works even today. So these are the three, and Eve eats the fruit. Now Adam has got two choices. Okay, when Eve pops up to Adam, he's got two choices. Number one, he could tell Eve, good luck to you. You screwed up. You screwed up hard here. He could go to God and he could say, you know what, the woman that you put here in the garden with me, look at what she's done. But I'm being good, I'm being righteous, I'm being legalistic. I want a perfect one. You gave me a defunct Eve. I want a good Eve. I want a perfect Eve.
I think there's many husbands out there that would say that today.
I want a perfect bride that's never going to give me any trouble or put me in this position again. Because I own it all. But that's not what Adam did. Adam was about to make the hardest decision of his whole life. And I would conjecture that the reason he bit that fruit is because he loved Eve so much that he was stepping into death itself, into an unknown fate. He was willing to lay down everything for a part of himself. And God himself would return. See, this is the reason they weren't destroyed, because this was not done in defiance to God. It was done in love. And God himself, when you're looking at Jesus Christ, right, the church is called the bride of Christ. That's not happenstance. What was Eve to Adam? Right? She was tarnished. But Adam loved her so much. What you're looking at is the most beautiful love story on the planet Earth when you're reading the Bible. And what you're looking at with Jesus Christ, see, it's not just the physical actions of Jesus Christ. You're looking at literal symbolism of God's heart for mankind. That I am going to go to my death for you, even while you're spitting on me. And this is God doing this. In representation in the flesh. Flesh that looks like your flesh. So that you can relate, which is a real big deal if you think about it. That's his letter to you. Everything Jesus is doing is symbolism. It's not just that it literally happened, which it literally did, but it is all, the more you read about Jesus, every single thing he's doing is symbolism of God's love for you. And it began on a tree, and it's going to end on a very bloody tree, a cross. That's where it ends. Of course, the first words of Jesus in the Bible were, Mother, you should have known I was about my Father's business. And the last words on that cross are, it is finished.
Well, Trey?
Yeah.
How can people find you online?
Go over to GodInANutshell.com or just type my name in. There's quite a bit of stuff out there, but I you know, come on over to GodInANutshell.com. Hopefully everything's working by the time you get there. I think it will be.
So you have YouTube videos. If they want to find you on YouTube, how do they get to you?
Just type in Trey Smith and look for all the stuff that comes up on top, and you're going to find a lot of it. And go through those videos until you find something you like. And I put that stuff up there. A lot of that stuff you can buy DVDs of. But I make sure that those videos are always available to watch for free. so that you can show them to family members. But I also appreciate it when you take the time to buy a DVD. That helps me make the next one.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say thank you for joining us. Trey Smith, you are awesome. I love talking to you. And let me tell you, the next time we have Trey on the air, it's going to be a mind-blowing thing. I hear that he's got something in the works that he's working on right now that we're not going to disclose, even though our name is Radio Disclosure. You're going to have to wait to find out what it is when he gets ready to release it. This is Radio Disclosure. Everyone have a good night.